it just working like this?
Yeah, I think so. Just talk into the box and...
Hello. Allo, allo? Ah. Okay, wonderful. Welcome to this series of NIS lectures. Very, very warm welcome to all those that are new to the lectures. I will do everything to keep your interest for the rest of the semester. So the lectures are every last Friday of the month, and we usually get external speakers. So next month, for example, the Deputy IT Security Officer of CERN is going to come and talk about his experience. Or in December, we have the Bishop of Hamar, who's talking about ethics and security. This year, for the semester upstart, we decided to talk about something that we've been doing for the university. So it's Gao Tewangen, who's a course responsible for a risk management course in the bachelor, now a bachelor in information security, who did work with his students to make NTNU more secure. And he brought two of his students with him. So there's Ivit and Stola, who are going to support him and demonstrate some of the cases that they did together. So this has been an exciting first week, also for us. We had an alumni event last night. This is why you see all these balloons flying around. I think we had a good event. For all those that were there, please clap now. So, some Nerf guns and some fun. And today was also the Education Advisory Board meeting, and actually somebody was saying it's very important that we're not only talking about security as tools, but also what security can really bring society, and that every secure computer is bringing some security to the internet. And I think you've been contributing to that. I thought that was a very nice intro. And have fun now with the next lecture.
Okay. Can everybody hear me? There? Is that good? Good. Okay. Thanks a lot for the introduction. I brought my two brave brothers in arms here. This is Eivind here, and Sturla, who was volunteered to join me, and they are strong risk assessors. So I'm going to talk about the course that we did, the risk management methods and standards. Coincidentally, risk assessments is my favorite thing, and also the most favorite thing of my students. So let's begin. Risk assessments are the cornerstone of information security, as they decide and help in deciding what to protect and how to protect it. So we're going to talk about how we did risk assessments and our contributions to improved security here at NTNU. And also, before we begin, I see a lot of people who helped during the project work here. Thanks to all. And we also have some contributions and credits on the front slide here. So moving on, the outline. We're going to talk about the background of why we do risk assessments here at NTNU. Further, I'm going to give you some, to those who are uninitiated into the risk assessment regime, I'm going to give you some background information. And then I'm going to describe to you the risk assessment course. Then Eivind and Sturla will both present their projects. Together, then I will give some hard-earned practical advice on how to run risk assessment projects. And some examples of the contributions we did or made. And I'll leave you with 9 pitfalls for the risk assessment project. So the reason why we do risk assessment, or one of the main reasons, is this. It's anchored in the information security policy here at NTNU, which I know that all of you have read. And the first principle of the principles document says that NTNU shall have a risk assessment-based approach to information security. But the real reason why we do a risk assessment is to avoid stuff like this. In May, teacher clicked forward to all on an email that contained sensitive information about one student, and she sent it to all students of the course. The Data Protection Authority in Norwegian, they found this a breach of the Privacy Act, and they fined NTNU 75,000. However, with a budget of billions, it's not necessarily the amount that hurts. It is when we scroll further down the article that maybe the most damage becomes apparent. The article says, to those of you who don't speak Norwegian, the article says NTNU... The link says NTNU becomes largest on information security. Further, during Easter, somebody tried to spearfish the rector, or tried to exploit the rector's email account and spearfish his coworkers. As far as we know, they discovered the attempt before it made any damage and thwarted it. However, this shows that the capable actors are targeting us and our leaders. So, moving on. Human factors, always present. During summers, there was going to be a routine upgrade to Windows 10. 484 computers wiped clean. Let's hope that everybody had followed the recommended backup routines. Last week, Olympiatoppen has received a lot of negative publicity the last year or last weeks because Norway performed very poorly during the Olympics. This is unrelated. Last week, somebody managed to wiretap the camera feeds going from Olympiatoppen lab in NTNU Trondheim. They taped these feeds and published them on adult websites. So, it is safe to say that there are plenty of risks to worry about here. We also had reports of equipment theft up into the range of 500,000 blamed on access control violations. NTNU owns 18 to 19,000 computers, plus all the students who are on the network. You have to account for at least or at about 30,000 users being online or being logged into a network at all time, which means that the probability of malware in the network is close to 100% at all time. Which brings me to industrial espionage. NTNU has state-of-the-art research within many, many capital-intensive areas. such as maritime technology, petroleum, and also mice brains. So so this is the reason why we do risk assessments. And here is our high-level threat model. Okay, so on a more serious note, we approach these problems with risk assessments. So, for the uninitiated, like I said, this is the process. This is the very formal process, so I'll drag you through it. The main reason to do risk assessments is to make the best possible decision on the information you have available. So, to follow the process very quickly, we define the context of an activity. For example, me going to work on Monday, and we want to consider the risks of this activity. So, for example, I can consider the scenario of me being fished on Monday. So I go on to identify all the possible adverse outcomes of this activity. Then I start with what is the attacker interested in? That is my asset, my valuable. Then I go to who will attack me, which is the threat. And then I move to how, which is the vulnerability and the attack vector, which is in this case is a phishing attack. And from this, I consider all adverse outcomes, and I pick the ones that are most plausible from this list, and I move on to risk assessment, which is to estimate the likelihood and the consequence of the outcome or of the risk. Moving on, I find those risks that are unacceptable. Those that I cannot accept, those that are too bad to accept, and I choose a risk treatment. A risk treatment in this case would be not to open my email during work day on Monday. However, you know, this will impede my work and maybe make me less efficient. So I have to do a cost benefit analysis, and all of my previous students know this. So. And we re-evaluate after implementing a treatment if the risk is acceptable. Currently, and this changes at regular intervals, risk is defined as the effect of uncertainty on objectives. And I know that this was written by an academic, because if nobody understands what you mean, the only academics love footnotes so much that they write six of them to explain. So moving further, we used ISO 27005 for the course. We focus on assets, our valuables, threats, those that we fear, and vulnerabilities, the hole in the fortress that the threat can exploit to obtain access to the asset. So, and also controls. So controls are my barriers or my defenses. So this is our main approach. This year we used ISO 27005. Last year we tried Octave Allegro as a method, and previous years we have done the Norwegian National Security Authority's risk and vulnerability assessments. Which brings me further to the course, risk management methods and standards, which was the course that we ran this spring. This is the last time it was run in this manner, at least so far. I was the course responsible this year. Previous year, I was an assistant working with Nils Svensson. And I finished this course back in 2008 as a student. So I'm getting a bit old here. So. The students with the course, they are first-year students. They have done one semester, so they have some basic training in information security. And they get some basic training in the risk management methods. So they try these methods on a mock case. And when I say they're good enough, we let them loose on the real case. The real case is provided by NTNU IT Services. Stian and Christopher have been the primary stakeholders there. We collect data, no pen testing. imagining letting 40 students out into your network doing uncontrolled pen tests. So no pen testing is the rule of engagement. We collect data, we risk analyze, we suggest risk treatments, and we have a presentation, a very scary presentation for the stakeholders at the end. The stakeholders this year was security personnel from Trondheim. They joined during the stream, and head of IT, and Christopher, the security advisor here, and the very, 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 very scary external examiner. The end report was the main deliverable, and this was also forwarded to Trondheim, to the security departments there, and to the projects that we risk assessed. And this was the first semester that we did it for NTNU as a whole. So here are some of the audits we have done. Sturla and Eivind will talk about their projects. In addition to their projects, we did a risk assessment of the Follow Me printing solution that has just been rolled out here at campus. And we also looked at the collaboration services for the employees, where we found Slack to be quite interesting. In addition, we have looked at the campus or the departments here at the campus, and a variety of other targets. So that brings me to Sturla's talk, and he will discuss his project.
Okay, can you hear me? Yes. Hi, my name is Sturla, and I were the group leader of Team Beyblade, a team which consisted of 10 first-year information security students. And our project was to make a risk assessment on the NTNU project IAM2. And this stands for Identity and Access Management 2. When we started out, we wondered, what the heck now? What is even an identity and access management system? And where do we get information about this project? Luckily, we got some good advice from Gaute, and we started out with reading about identity and access management systems, and we contacted our project manager to get more information. To keep it short, an identity and access management system is how electronic identities are made. Because when NTNU merged with 3 university colleges, it ended up with over 60,000 identities. And earlier, each institution had their own IAM system, so it was a great need for a unified system. And now with IAM2, student data is collected from FS, the common student system, and employee data is collected from PAGA, which is NTNU's payroll system. Authorization is granted manually upon registration. For instance, I'm both a student and employee here at NTNU. So the identity and access management system has to collect data both from FS and PAGA and join this data together to make my electronic identity here. And during our risk assessment, we used ISO 27005, which Gaute talked about. And it consists of 64 pages of some of the heaviest reading I've ever seen. 2 months into the semester, most of our group members still hadn't read the whole standard. But it got easier after a while, and it is divided into several processes, which has an easy-to-understand input, action, and output. But of course, there were a lot of challenges. There were a single web page on the NTNU Wiki about the project, so we were very dependent on the project manager to send us information. But we ended up having some problems with the communication because right before Easter, there was a problem with the email translation. So one of the emails from our project manager never got through. In his first two emails, he had written dot 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 at the end of many of his sentences, so we wondered if he was already tired of us. But luckily, he was just very fond of writing dot dot dot. So after a couple of weeks, we sent a new email, and then we immediately got a reply. We also got covered from the IT department here in Gjøvik, a trip to Trondheim, where we had a single day of interviews, and there we collected most of our data. Of course, we learned a lot by this project. It was an exciting way to learn risk management, and NTNU IT also seemed very pleased with our results. And of course, we also learned a lot more than just risk management. It was quite difficult to work in that large group, where we had to make a group policy, and especially I had to become better at designating tasks, as there were a lot of people. And most of the time, I felt more like I was working in the human resource department. And I also learned how huge NTNU in Trondheim is. We only visited Gløshaugen, but it was still large enough to amaze me. And in the bottom picture here, you can see an extract from one of the last risk assessments on the IAM project in 2013. So we had a few tips for future risk assessments on NTNU. Please don't just use people from the economy and medical faculty for the next risk assessment, as this hadn't led to very good information security risks. And now Eivind will talk a little about his project.
Hello. Does this thing work? Yeah, okay. Hello, my name is Eivind Storsvenberg. I was part of the group Fredrik's Minions, conducting an information security audit of the joint endpoint management system at NTNU. The joint endpoint management project was intended to promote and support cooperation between NTNU campus Trondheim and all the outlying campuses. Two of its main goals was to make it easier for people, for employees to use their digital devices when visiting a different campus, and to reduce the overall operating costs by at least 5%. It would achieve this by moving towards a more centralized infrastructure for their IT systems. Our task during all this was to conduct an informational security review, identifying potential information security threats that could impede this process. As soon as our work began, we immediately realized how important it was to establish a good scope. We were asked to work on something as huge as the entire endpoint management system for all of NTNU, and had to first figure out where to start and what we were supposed to do, and what we weren't supposed to do, as we couldn't possibly analyze every single aspect of the system. So I'm not sure if this was an intended part of Goethe's course, but it definitely was a trial by fire. During our work, we learned several wonderful things about the ISO standard. We learned how to apply the ISO standard to a real practical system. We learned several things about endpoint management systems and just managing IT in general. We learned how to use Gaute's pyramid of fear, which is something you'll learn about later in this lecture. We also learned a lot of the terminology used in the field. And I think every member of my group left the semester with the skills and knowledge required to use the ISO standard to identify threats facing a system. And I feel like I personally became more comfortable working in groups and know more what to expect of various group projects. And these were all the things I kind of expected to learn in this course. But there were also many things I didn't expect to learn. Working in a large group of 10 people, where you even get to write a contract and make legal documents, is not as easy as I first thought. I knew that it was part of the course to work in a large group and you're supposed to learn from it, but I didn't think it would be quite this central to my experience of the course. We learned how important it was to assign roles to each member of the team. We learned how to manage all the research data we gathered during our work. We learned how to use project management tools like Trello. And we learned how to assign an appropriate number of people to each task. Because if you have too many people, it doesn't make the task go quicker. It just means that people are looking over each other's shoulders, so they're talking to each other too much. So having an appropriate number of people for each individual task was quite important. On a more unfortunate note, we also learned just how wise one of the things Gauta told us early in the course was. He told us that contracts are signed in friendship and used in conflict. And we definitely learned a lot about structure, elements, and the general shape of a good contract, although mainly we just learned how important it is to have one. Another key element of our course was learning how to communicate what you've found to other people so they could understand what you've done. The crowds you're catering to are going to vary greatly. There are lots of different people that can end up in your crowd. But generally, the people you're presenting your findings to are not professionals in this field that you're exploring. And therefore, things like concise and accurate summaries and visual models to show are very important to communicate these findings to people who are not as competent as you. Although I must admit, prior to my beginning my studying here, I had an image of the security information professional that involved them just writing reports and presentations, caring little about the actual competence of the people they were going to present to, and just viewing their inability to understand the information as just punishment for their ignorance and laziness. So that's changed a bit since. And in conclusion, we did manage finally, after losing two people on the team and a moderate amount of sleep, to finish our report. And having finished my report and completed the entire course, I can say that in my mind, I don't think there's any better way to learn how to conduct an informational security review than to work together with an organization like NTNU, have them give you a real-life case where you're working on real systems while you're still in close contact with very knowledgeable people in that organization, and while receiving excellent guidance from people who really know what they're doing, like Christopher and Gauta. And also, although we had much good help from our own campus, we did go on a trip to Trondheim. And I have to thank everyone at the NTNU Trondheim for being so incredibly helpful and patient with us, the students. They were willing to take out a lot of time in their day and to answer a lot of questions to help us along. And most of the information we gathered during our work was gained from interviews with people at the NTNU Trondheim. At the IT department there. So I definitely have to thank them. I have to thank Rune, and I have to thank Oliver Langfeldt and Trude Gunnarsson, who was our project manager. And yeah, that's it for me. Thank you for listening.
Okay, is that good? Is that good? Yeah. Okay. There. Is that better? Yeah, thanks. So thank you to Sturla and Eivind. So now we move on to some hard-earned practical advice for risk assessment projects. The illustration I've chosen for this slide illustrates how, or my interpretation of how the students see their assignment in the beginning. So let's move on. In the preliminary work and the context, a lot of the students are very eager to get started. So they get the assignment and they go at it with full vigor and 110%. A lot of them, they start collecting data without really knowing what to look for. So they start plowing the internet, etc., and they create large amounts of low-quality data, which just is basically a waste of time. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that another kind of eagerness is that they start going at the different steps of the method without following the sequence. So, for example, some of them started with the asset identification before actually scoping the task, and this is also created a lot of problems. So So understand the business, spend time and understand the business goals, the products they deliver, etc. Here at NTNU, we are academics, most of us, and spend time on understanding what we do for a living, etc. This will help when you design, when you to understand risk and design risk treatments and understand the risk criteria. And also, when we don't do pen tests, we have found that interviews are by far the best data collection method. Find out which information you need and find the key stakeholders who may know what you need to gather and map the competence. And the key point here is that the data collection is the cornerstone of the assessment. If there is no data collection, there is no risk assessment. So this is the most important part of the assessment, and maybe the one that most students struggle most with. So my approach here is that we remove what is not good practice, and we're hopefully left with what works. So I have made a list of what you should not do during the data collection phase. And to begin with, do not use jargon, technical jargon that is only specific to your field. And this year, the students were very lucky. They only dealt with IT security practitioners and project managers, etc. So jargon worked. And I remember that we had some issues with this last year. So I contacted one of the previous students yesterday, and he found a nice illustration for me. The context of this is we were doing a risk assessment of one of the departments here, and the students have been working very long on a questionnaire. And the context of this is that they have had asked which are the three most important assets or information assets in your daily work. So and the respondent had answered fairly seriously, and then the following follow-up question was: which three systems do you need to process this information? And the respondent said, fingers, head, nervous system, coordination, and a feasible way to understand others' terminology. And the follow-up question was, what would it mean to you if and your work if these systems became unavailable? And the respondent said, I would be dead or totally disabled. I would have to be on welfare. So do not use jargon. Other people will interpret your words differently than you do. So that's the lesson. And also we have prepared interviews without contacting interview subjects, and a lot of the groups have been working very long with their interviews and trying to map out, but they haven't contacted the interview subjects. And what has happened is that the students believe that once they contact the interview subject, the subject will just appear magically. You know, I'm ready today. Come at 11 or 1, but the world does not work that way. So what has happened is that interviews have been postponed for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and put the whole project at risk. So don't believe that the risk assessment is the number one priority of the interview subject. And do not underestimate culture. NTNU is a multicultural work environment, and people see things differently. In Norway, we look at these risk assessments. I think generally they're not seen as a major threat. For example, I talked to the information security manager in Trondheim, and he said that he views these assessments as a way to improve himself. You know, he gets to highlight his weaknesses and he gets to improve. This is not necessarily how other cultures see this. We have had instances where employees have been physically hiding from the students. So, come prepared to interviews. Don't ask irrelevant questions, because those questions will annoy the interview subject and you don't get nothing. So this was highlighted as a major issue for most students, that they hadn't prepared well enough, and the interview subject had been quite annoyed with them. another thing, and this leads me to one of my key points, is that do not rely on email for establishing contact. If a person receives 30 plus emails every day, your email is way too easily ignored. So do not rely on email for establishing contact. And this takes me further to my hierarchy of fear, as Eivind called it. This, I call it the hierarchy of efficiency, intrusiveness, and fear. And on your left side, you see, or the pyramid shows the different communication strategies available for the student. And you see the efficiency on the left side, and you see the intrusiveness for the interview subject on the right side. And you see the fear meter on this side. Yeah, so... And you see the pyramid, as you move through the pyramid, the student will, or the auditor will experience more fear. For example, I use this in practice. I tried to recruit some students to join me for this talk. So I started in the email and the blue zone, sent an email, asked for volunteers. Guess what? Didn't work. So... I moved further down into the green zone, and I employed direct message service Facebook Messenger. And the Facebook Messenger has this socially awkward feature that says message seen at time. So I sent a message to Sturla, and I got him to join me. But to recruit Eivind, I had to move further down. But the point here... Sorry. But the point here is that, you know, direct contact with voice is by far the most efficient. Telephone calls are not so intrusive because they can be postponed and they can be ignored. But it's very hard to ignore somebody when they're talking to you face to face. But it's far more intrusive. So getting the students to jump from the blue and green zone and to the red and yellow was one of the key points of my lectures. Which takes me further to data analysis. When we have made all the data analysis, or collected all the data, it's time to make some analysis and try to identify the risk. Making a thorough asset evaluation and threat assessment and vulnerability assessments are useful on their own. And this will help ease the pain throughout the rest of the analysis as well. So making the asset evaluation is a nice piece of information for the decision maker on its own, as it's far better to know which assets to protect than knowing nothing at all. So these three items, spend time on them and make them properly. One of the key issues that we encounter is also that the students have a very hard time knowing what is a risk or what is a risk and what isn't. And I think that experience has shown that you need some expertise before you get great at this and try and to see which is which. But here's some points. Deviations from the security policy is should always be analyzed. The security policy is written for the organization, and therefore it's very likely a risk if there are deviations from it. Best practices are not so much interest, or deviations from best practices are not as likely as security policy, but they should still be analyzed. And if something seems off, it generally is. If there's something weird, it generally is weird and should be analyzed. And getting the students to actually show off the stuff that they found is also a major issue or major challenge for me. So moving forward, we're going to talk a bit about risk scenarios and communication. I've made this attack tree for you. I'm not going to go in deep detail, but it shows you from the left side, it shows an attacker, and it shows an attack vector. It shows a payload, and it shows a target, and it shows the outcome. The key with this figure, the illustration, is that it's very complex. This is a model of a phishing attack, but the scenarios are multiple. So, for example, I can consider multiple attackers, which will give me new scenarios. I could consider multiple payloads. I could consider other targets, and I could consider other outcomes. So risk assessing a phishing attack is very complex. So when you start doing this, you'll find a lot of different risk scenarios, risk descriptions, and you need to find the best or find the ones that are most critical and prioritize them for analysis, or else you will be overloaded with work. So document the rest and prioritize with an iron fist. And this brings me to maybe one of the most underestimated issues in risk assessments, which is risk communication. What I'm going to talk about here, it does not cover the whole topic of risk communication, but here's my contribution. Risk communication is essential. So when you describe something, you need to make other people understand it. If they don't understand what you're saying, there will be no remediation for your risk. So we're going to give you some examples here, and we're going to do a reverse spaghetti western here. And I've been told by Eivind that I need to also make clear the reference, because most of you were not born in the 1950s. So The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is the movie. Okay, so we start with the ugly. An employee gets fished. Some risks are formulated in this way. And if you remember the figure from last page, this is worthless. This gives us nothing, or just phishing. This is the ugly of risk descriptions. And we move on to the bad. Where all context and meaning are lost in words and ambiguity. Not specifying any particular vulnerability, speculating about consequences without considering specific assets. Also considering multiple attack vectors and threat agents for one risk. All of these threats, disgruntled employee and, for example, student or random guy, have different motivations, capacities, and capabilities. These are different risks. So this is the bad. So we move on to the good. And you know that Clint Eastwood is dead on point. Unambiguous, easy to risk assess. For example, what is the probability of the system breaking down and the person being unavailable and at the same time? This is easy to risk assess and easy to communicate. In addition, how much will it cost if the system is down 1 hour, 2 hours, 24 hours? This is the good risk description and what we have been working for in IMT 1132, risk management. And this was also, this example is from one of the reports, so kudos. Which takes me further to the contributions to NTNU security and the results. So we have contributed with manpower for risk assessing large projects, changes and investments. And I think that NTNU IT has benefited from our contribution. And the risk assessments this year was of such a good quality that NTNU IT in Trondheim, they forwarded our reports to the external auditor when he came visiting this month. The best assessments from previous years have been forwarded to the Ministry of Education and Research. And they've also been forwarded to leaders. And maybe the most important contribution is that they have led to discussion. So. When people read them, they look through them and they say, okay, this can't be right, or this is this right? And they start looking through the results and start discussing. And even though if our results are wrong, they still look into them and they raise awareness. We have one example of improved security, which was before I started with teaching the course. One specific contribution of a vulnerability. Well, the students did a physical control or physical audit of the temporary locations at Mustad. And they tried to get into the administration's office. I think it was the administration. And they found an open door, and they managed to get inside the building. And they found the service elevator. And they took it all the way up to the roof, or got access to the roof. And they managed to grab the radio link. They didn't break it, but this was such... The radio link gave connectivity to all of the people working there. So if this one was broken, it would have created a loss of availability. And this was so severe that they fixed it immediately. So I'll talk a bit about physical security weaknesses. We work in the abstract. with risk assessment. It's very hard to show you any real contributions because we work in the abstract. But physical security, I can show you some pictures. What you need to know is that NTNU has a document classification policy, which states that sensitive information needs to be secured appropriately. We also have an information system classification and physical security zones, and security controls should be in place for all of this to secure them. So, moving on. Did you remember to lock the door? What do you think? So we poke around and we found some, find a lot of available stuff. And also this next one is a classic. This one is open door, accessible computer, key in drawer, and open documents. So this one is a classic. And at please do not lock the door to my office. And also, on a different note, last year we also discovered that some of the contingency plans were available on the internet. And this vulnerability was also so severe that they took the system offline until they patched the vulnerability. So these are some concrete contributions that we made. And we leave you with 9 pitfalls for running an information security project. So that's all we have, and thanks a lot for watching. Yeah.
Den er på?
Ja, den er på. Ja. Ja.
Okay, I have a question for both of the groups. Just wonder how you were organized besides having a leader. Were you basically 10 analysts or did you have different roles?
Yeah, sorry.
The group members themselves chose the different roles, and we talked a little to find out what values each person had, and then voted who should be